Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for joining me this hour. Earlier in the show, we heard some great archival audio about the legendary Plaza Hotel. The Plaza has been a major player in the city's history. It's been in movie scenes like The Way We Were and Home Alone 2. The history of the Plaza is also the history of this city, full of drama and intrigue, through boom and bust, full of many eccentric characters. The new book by Julie Satow, called The Plaza, The Secret Life of America's Most Famous Hotel, tells the history of the hotel, its guests, and how the Plaza became a symbol of wealth, luxury and glamour here in New York. Julie, welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, listeners, do you have some sort of tantalizing story about the Plaza? Did you ever stay in the hotel? Maybe you went to a party in the Palm Court, had lunch in the Oak Room, drinks maybe? Or maybe you knew someone who lived there. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are open, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We're looking for stories about the Plaza Hotel. Please share yours. Okay, so take us back to the founding of the Plaza. The building we see now was not the original building,
no.
Correct?
Yeah, there was a first plaza that opened in 1890. It was only there for about a dozen years. It was very old-fashioned, so it was quickly torn down to rebuild the plaza we all know.
So the one that we all know, what was it based on? I mean, it has a very specific look to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Henry Hardenberg, who was the architect, he actually did the Dakota apartment building and the original Waldorf Astoria. He's kind of this mysterious character. Not a lot is actually known about him, even though he was famous in his own lifetime, which is interesting. But he created the plaza to look like a Greek column. So the beginning is like rusticated marble, and then you have the column's base, and then the interesting mansard roof is its shaft. It's supposed to reflect the greenery of Central Park. So
he was the person who designed it, but who was the person, or maybe he is the person, who was really the heart and soul of it, that
yeah.
really made the plaza the plaza?
Yeah. Well, the plaza, the history of the plaza really is, in some ways, the history of its owners. So the first owner was kind of this fascinating character, Harry Black. He was this bigger-than-life, kind of almost Trump sort of character. He was the first ever skyscraper owner. He built the Flatiron Building as well. He sort of owned this whole real estate company that was huge at the time. And he built the plaza. He lived in the penthouse. Mm-hmm. It was very fabulous. And he was sort of this big, man about town. He was a big believer in stocks in the 1920s. He bought lots of stocks and was a big Wall Street booster. Of course, the 1929 Wall Street crash really affected his wealth. He ended up trying to kill himself in the bathtub of his plaza penthouse. He was not successful. His valet revived him. He eventually was successful the following year. But it's sort of, he was really the heart and soul, I would say, of the beginning of the plaza.
Listeners, our phone lines are open. The number is 212-433-9692. Do you have a story about the Plaza Hotel? Did you see the Beatles when they stayed there? Maybe you attended Truman Capote's Black and White Ball? Please give us a call. 212-433-9692. 212-433-WNYC. We're talking about the history of the Plaza with Julie Satow. The name of her book is The Plaza, The Secret Life of America's Most Famous Hotel. So when the Plaza first opened and it first arrived in New York, what was its competition?
Yeah, it's interesting. The Plaza's always sort of been at the forefront of all these trends in New York. So when it opened, Alfred Gwynne Vanderbilt was the first ever guest. He was one of the country's wealthiest men. He was the first to check in. It really helped usher in this idea of wealthy people actually living in apartments. Before that, many wealthy New Yorkers lived in their own homes, and they had this servant problem of upkeep with all the servants and upkeeping these mansions. Instead, Vanderbilt moves into the Plaza. It's now acceptable for these wealthy people to move in, and you just sort of have this apartment living starting with the Plaza. There wasn't that much. I mean, there was the Waldorf Astoria was also around, but I would say the Plaza really had a special, unique position in New York.
And Vanderbilt he came to an interesting demise as well.
He did. His mother lived right next door in the Vanderbilt Mansion, which still is the biggest home ever built in New York. It's now where the Bergdorf Goodman department store stands. And he was on the Lusitania, which is a ship that was actually hit by a torpedo during World War I. And he's credited with saving the lives of all these kids. He didn't know how to swim. He gave his life jacket to a woman. His body was never recovered. So he was a hero.
Yeah, there was a story that he rounded up all the kids and got them into the boats.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's check in with Laura from Westchester. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling all of it. What's your plaza story?
My plaza story is a lot more recent than Lusitania, but when I was a college student, I was at Barnard in the early 1990s, and the plaza had a movie theater. And I used to go down as a student, sort of an escape from the Upper West Side. And I do remember meeting my sister one day, and we went to the movies. I wish I could remember the movie. I don't. But not everybody knew that there was a movie theater within.
Yes.
Laura, thank you so much for calling. One of the interesting things that you write about in the book is this idea that the plaza wanted to usher in this idea of extreme luxury. They had a dog check.
Yes.
For the restaurant.
Yes.
They had some sort of system to literally make rarefied air.
Yes.
What was that?
Yeah, I mean, it was built for $12.5 million. It was the most expensive hotel ever built. It had a maid who basically was in charge of this dog check room, and wealthy people could come and bring their pets, and she would, you know, pamper them with dog food. And it had a special purification system in the building to purify the air. There were thermostats, which was revolutionary for the time. There was, electric clocks, all kinds of things that were just really opulent at the time. There were over 1,600 chandeliers and two men whose only job was just to dust them. So, yeah.
You write about some of the eccentric and interesting occupants of the hotel. There's one chapter you have called The 39 Widows of the Plaza. Why were there so many widows living at the Plaza Hotel?
Yes, it was definitely for a time seen really as an old age home for wealthy dowagers, I would say. They were a very eccentric bunch. There was a woman who's credited with inventing the cocktail party who lived there for about half a century. There was a woman, a Russian princess, who actually came with a veritable zoo. She had a family of alligators, an owl, and eventually she bought a lion at the circus, and she kept him in the bathtub of her plaza suite until the hotel said enough is enough and it went to the Bronx Zoo. So there is a whole history of women living there, and there were also some men, a few men.
What was it about the hotel that it would attract these eccentric, very wealthy people, some of whom, you write in the book, their wealth was sort of murky where it came from,
yes,
to put it nicely.
Well, that is especially true in the later years with the condominiums. But yes, even back then, that's true. I think that the plaza's just always been this icon, like the Brooklyn Bridge or the Empire State Building. Its position at the foot of Central Park, right where Fifth Avenue, begins. It's sort of this center of Manhattan, center of New York. So it's always kind of had this draw from the very beginning.
My guest is Julie Sato. The name of her book is The Plaza, The Secret Life of America's Most Famous Hotel. So it's this, as an institution, it has been through, it's 129 years, been through World War I, World War II, the Depression, 1970s New York bankruptcy. Was any one event particularly that it put it in jeopardy, that the plaza might not
Well, survive? It only went bankrupt once, and that was actually under our current president. He was the only person to ever bankrupt the plaza. I would say that was, in some ways, obviously the most financially dire moment for the hotel. But the 1970s were really tough. The owners at the time tried to make the hotel hip and cool, and they tried to bring in this den mother who would wander around in cocktail attire and even a leotard to try to make it seem very like chic and young. They redid the Edwardian room, and they called it the Green Tulip. They painted all the beautiful dark wood white, and they put Muzak instead of classical music in the sound system. There was many times, even during the Depression as well, but it's always survived.
Let's take a call. Let's go to Allison, who is calling us from, it looks like, Perrington Park in New Jersey. Hi, Allison. Thanks for calling all of it.
Yeah. Back in 1999, it was, all the Y2K buzz, and I was a young kid, and my dad had the clever idea of saying, "Hey, kids, we're going to New York for New Year's. We're going to stay at the Plaza Hotel," which at the time, you'd think that that would be, I mean, obviously, it'd be very expensive for a family of four. We weren't like, just like a middle-class family, but my dad was very clever because they were running a special because everyone was so scared. And so we got a deal at the Plaza in 1999, and it was great. We got to enjoy the lap of luxury, and I think my dad may have taken a couple towels.
That's awesome. I never heard that story. That's really cool.
Allison, thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Leslie in Little Neck. Hi, Leslie.
Hi there.
So what's your Plaza story?
I was excited to call and tell you that I have such great memories of going to the Plaza as a little girl. Our family friend was the florist there, and I always had this wonderful feeling when I went in. We were treated like royalty, and I had a little fantasy that I was just like Eloise when I went there. So it still makes me tingle all over thinking about the wonderful experiences I had going there. And then I spent my wedding night there as well. So is that much of a special place for me.
Leslie, thank you so much for sharing your memories. Yeah. Our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. My guest is Julie Sato. We're talking about her book, The Plaza, The Secret Life of America's Most Famous Hotel. Please join the conversation. How did the hotel react to changing cultural mores and values? For example, when Prohibition came about.
Yeah, so that was really tough for the Plaza because all of a sudden, no one wanted to go to a hotel bar anymore because there was no bar, there was no alcohol. So, everyone was going to the 21 Club and the speakeasies. So the Plaza they closed the Oak Room, they closed the bar, they actually made it into a brokerage office. A lot of the areas of the hotel closed. And, some of the doormen or the bellhops, they would sneak, flasks of alcohol to guests and for payment. And, the hotel rooms actually became much more important because people would go up to the rooms and there you could drink without anyone knowing. So even F. Scott Fitzgerald, for instance, in The Great Gatsby has that scene at the Plaza in the suite where they're all sort of drinking and hanging out. And that's really what was going on at the time.
Let's go to Dane from Basking Ridge. Dane, I believe, worked at the Plaza. Hi, Dane. Ooh. Hi, Dane. Are you there?
Karen, can you hear me?
I can. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Okay. My parents' friends paid for them to have dinner at the Plaza for their first anniversary in 1939. Wow. And I think they got to watch Frank Sinatra close to his beginnings.
Wow.
But they really enjoyed it.
That's excellent. Thank you so much for sharing.
Bye-bye.
There was a great swank nightclub back then at the Plaza called the Persian Room, and it had a lot of famous performers, including Kay Thompson, who would go on to write the Eloise stories. So Frank Sinatra definitely could have played there.
It was Derek. I got mixed up. Derek on line 5. Derek, you worked at the Plaza Hotel, correct?
I did. My initial story was how I almost lost my first job in New York at the Plaza for accused of padding my expense account. But I was only a trainee on relocation benefits in the sales team. I had a birthday celebration for one of the sales reps, and we went to Trader Vic's, which was one of the 5 Plaza restaurants. And when I submitted my expenses, because on the relocation, I was refunded for breakfast and dinner. It was like $39, I think it was. And my manager and his boss tried to whack me or fire me, saying I padded my expenses and I had no business going to the Plaza Hotel to have my dinner. I only had 2 beers and a plate of chicken wings, but the sales team said we're going to split it evenly 6 ways. And they had all kinds of, these were adults with salespeople. They were partying it up, and I was just trying to, hang in. So I got off with that one. But later on, in the 90s, that was in the 70s. In the 90s, I worked at the Plaza for the a contractor for the Plaza Platinum Club. It was a discount dining card for the five restaurants. And one of the things we were told was never to talk to the old lady down the hall, which was one of the widows. And because apparently in the earlier days when a lot of people were living in those hotel rooms and the husbands died, the widow stayed. And there's a law called, I think it's...
rent stabilization, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it was a because they were hotel rooms, these ladies were given rent stabilized rent, and it was really, really inexpensive.
Is this, Julie, does this sound true?
Yeah, definitely. There was a famous widow, which is probably who he's referring to, which is Fanny Lowenstein, who lived in a very big suite at the Plaza and paid basically nothing. During World War II, when rent stabilization happened in the city, the people who were living in the Plaza hotel rooms, you know, fell under the law. And so if you didn't leave, you were protected. And so she couldn't be evicted. And she lived there through the 80s. And in fact, even tussled famously with Donald Trump. Over. He said she was harder to deal with than Marla or Ivana. So there you go.
My guest is Julie Sato. The name of her book is The Plaza, The Secret Life of America's Most Famous Hotel. I want to ask about a couple of the owners. You've mentioned Donald Trump, but before Donald Trump was Conrad Hilton.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was seen as a little bit of a blessing and a curse because he put a lot of money into it.
Yeah.
But people didn't really like his style.
Yeah. He was seen as kind of this uncouth Westerner. He'd come from Texas. This was his first big New York hotel purchase. And you have all the widows and all these wealthy people who love the Plaza, these sort of New York blue bloods who felt he was really going to ruin the hotel. And he did do things that, you know, were somewhat controversial. For instance, the Palm Court had this amazing ceiling, and he took the ceiling down to put in air conditioning. But in the end, the widows and everyone else really appreciated the modernization that he put in. So he did win them over.
So in terms of the modern owners, there was Subrata Roy, mm-hmm. bought the Plaza. And then, as you were writing your book, what happened?
Yeah, so shortly after Subrata Roy, he's an Indian businessman. He claims to employ more people than any other business except the Indian Railroad. He's this huge figure in India. He purchased the Plaza. He'd never stayed there. He'd only visited it once for a very short period. He bought it a few weeks later. The Indian court system accused him of basically scheming about 30 million very poor Indians out of their life savings. He ended up spending 2 years in a maximum security prison in Delhi, running the Plaza from his prison cell. He is now out, but he is still barred from traveling abroad. I actually went to India to interview him for the book. It was very interesting. And then about a year ago, he finally the government of Qatar bought the hotel from him, essentially, and they are now the owners.
Is there one, I mean, you researched this for years. Is there one person or story about the Plaza that you think really gets to the heart of what the institution is?
Yeah, I would say, like, the thing that I found so interesting is everyone thinks they know the Plaza, but so many people, there was so much you don't know about it, which was really cool. And the history of the unions, I don't know.
That
to me
was interesting.
Yeah, from the very, very beginning, you know, when the hotel was under construction, there were union construction workers who were upset that the owners hired non-union workers. They actually threw a security guard off the unfinished eighth floor of the hotel, killing him. That was sort of the beginning of the union strife. And then you have in 1912, there was a big union strike, and the Plaza hired a bunch of African-American workers from the South to come as strike breakers. You obviously have the really famous, more recent story in 2005 when the hotel was converted partially into condominiums, and the hotel union in New York really put together a $2 million campaign to save the Plaza, quote unquote, is what they called it, and maintain a boutique hotel, which we have today. So that really, I think it sort of shows how the Plaza has reflected what's been going on in New York and even the country over more than a century.
The name of the book is The Plaza, The Secret Life of America's Most Famous Hotel. Julie Sato, thank you so much for coming to All of It.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for all our callers who called in with their stories. Up next, we'll hear from Dominic Apupa about his Pride Show in the Village that's going to run every Thursday this month at the Duplex. More after the break.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.